We're doing Tanya 200, and we're up to chapter 14. In the earlier chapters, the Rebbe describes what a Beinoni is, what a godly soul is, what an animal soul is, what the godly soul wants, what the animal soul wants, what are the properties of the godly and animal soul, what are the garments of the animal and the godly soul, what is the conflict between them. Basically, we have been told what the souls are and what the different kinds, categories of people are. What is a tzaddik? He has no appetite or desire for anything unholy. What is a sinner? Someone who can permit himself to violate or transgress a commandment. What is a beinoni? We found out in chapter 12 and 13. A beinoni is someone who cannot violate the commandment, even though his inner being is in conflict, because he has two souls and they have different opinions and so on. Now we get to the question of how. How does a beinoni do this? Every person should strive to be a beinoni, because every person can be a beinoni. We should not strive to be tzaddikim. We shouldn't strive to be saints, because we are not meant to be. We can't be. The reason is because a tzaddik has no appetite for anything unholy, but we do. And to change that is almost impossible. The mind controls the heart, but the mind cannot create the heart. So the animal soul's emotions are human, and they're going to remain human, and they're going to continue to desire what is pleasurable on the human level, not necessarily godly. That we cannot change. So we cannot become saints, because we are not in control of our hearts. A beinoni doesn't have to be in control of his heart. The beinoni does not have to despise evil in order to be good. The evil is not despised, but it is excluded. The beinoni cannot do evil because God will not permit it. The sinner can do evil even though God prohibits it. But how does the beinoni actually do this? The heart feels and desires something unholy. The beinoni refuses to do it. How did this happen? What's going on inside the beinoni? Now, the traditional, conventional response to an unholy desire in a person who wants to be good, the traditional response was to get stubborn, to say, I refuse to do this, I don't want to do this. Of course, I do want to do this, and that's what the conflict is all about. But I take the position that I don't want to do this. I don't want to hear about this. I'm not interested. It's a very difficult struggle. It's a difficult battle because it isn't true. I am interested. I do want to do it. And that's why there's a conflict. One of the things that traditionally, conventionally, helps come to the moral choice, to the moral decision, is to denigrate, to vilify the evil. The desire I have for doing that which is unholy, I have to come to hate it by telling myself how disgusting it is, how vile it is, and so on. That doesn't always work. And it doesn't necessarily make the person into a nicer person. So if I'm always sour on everything because of how unholy it is, I become a sour person. Another traditional approach is to tell myself not to sin, to convince myself not to give in to the temptation. I have to convince myself that I'm above it, that I'm better than that, that it's beneath me, beneath my dignity, to do something unholy or sinful. And again, that works. But if you make a habit of doing that, you eventually become convinced that you are in fact better, and that's not necessarily good. You develop a superiority complex, you look down at other people, you feel holier than everybody else, and that's not very holy either. So the Rebbe here in Tanya, chapter 14, gives us a glimpse into the inner workings of the Beinoni's conflicted heart. The Beinoni feels the desire or the attraction to something unholy or unkosher. Let's call it a sandwich, a non-kosher sandwich. Of course, the Beinoni refuses to eat it. His desire, his animal soul says, why won't you eat this? You're hungry. Eat it. And at first, the Beinoni says, no, I'm not going to eat it. I don't want to sin. It's a sin. But the animal soul says, I know it's a sin. We all know it's a sin. And you want to eat it, which means that you want to sin. So I don't understand what you're saying. You refuse to eat it, but you want to eat it. So why won't you? Now, instead of just getting stubborn and saying, I don't want to, the Rebbe suggests that we recognize the truth and admit to it. Yes, I do want it. I want to eat that sandwich, which means I want to sin. But then I'm not going to. Well, why not? Well, because although I want to eat the sandwich, which means I want to sin, I don't want the damage that that's going to produce. I don't want the consequence. If I commit the sin, I will alienate myself from God. I will put distance between myself and God. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to be distanced from God. To this, the animal soul says, that's very noble, commendable, but a little too late. When you desire what God despises, you're already very distant from God. God calls non-kosher food an abomination. You call it delicious. So you're obviously very far from God. You're on opposite ends of the spectrum. Now, whether you're going to eat the sandwich or not, you're far from God. So you might as well eat it, if that's your problem. Surprisingly, the Rebbe says, admit it. Don't fight it. It's true. When you desire what God despises, then obviously you're very far apart. So, what are you supposed to say? You say to your animal soul, you're right. I am very far from God. I don't want to remain far from God. I want to get closer to God. And the only way to get closer to God is by getting closer to that which is precious to Him. And those are the mitzvahs, the commandments. So if I keep the commandments, I get closer to Him. So I will not eat the non-kosher sandwich because I want to be closer to Him. To which your soul will say, your natural soul, your animal soul will say, what a hypocrite. How can you stand there and be so hypocritical? You are salivating over this sandwich. You want to get closer to the sandwich, and you have the chutzpah to stand there and say to me, I want to get closer to God. What a hypocrite. And even to this, you're supposed to say, you know, you're right. You're right. I cannot, in all honesty, say, I want to get closer to God. Right now, I just want to get closer to food. However, the natural love, that relationship that I have to God, which is inborn in every Jew by the very nature, by the fact that I'm a Jew, that part of me doesn't want to eat the sandwich. That part of me doesn't want to get separated from God. That part of me wants to get closer to God. Even the lowest of the low, even the most sinful Jew has this natural love. So it's not really about me. I, the personality, the human person within me, wants to get closer to the sandwich and not to God. But the Jew in me doesn't want to be severed from God and wants to get closer to God, just as in the lowest of the low. And don't tell me that I'm worse than the lowest of the low, because that's arrogant. That means I'm so special. Even the lowest of the low will, at times, sacrifice his life rather than deny his Jewishness, rather than give up his identity, rather than deny God, he would die. And he's the lowest of the low. So you see that in every Jew there is some relationship with God that just refuses to die. And so that's why I will not eat the sandwich. To which the animal soul might say, I don't understand. Why can't you be like the lowest of the low? Don't deny God. Don't deny your identity. Don't give up being a Jew. Just eat a sandwich. Like the lowest of the low. He commits all the sins. He violates all the commandments. He doesn't observe them. But if anyone ever threatens his identity as a Jew, if anyone ever says to him, well, then you're not Jewish, he's ready for war. He can't tolerate that. He can't accept that. And if somebody says, bow to an idol, deny your God, he can't do that, even if it means dying. But then he won't observe Shabbos, and he won't keep kosher, he won't put on tefillin, and won't go to the mikveh. So why can't you be like him? Eat what you want to eat, but don't ever let anyone take away your Jewish identity. Don't let anyone ever tell you to bow to an idol and deny your connection to God. Why can't you do that? And to this the Beinoni says, how does the lowest of the low do what he does? How can someone who in his heart of hearts would rather die than give up his identity, who would rather die than bow to an idol, who would rather die than deny his Jewishness, how does he allow himself to violate every commandment? Any commandment. He won't bow to a cross. He won't bow to the idol because that means he's denying his relationship with God. Isn't eating non-kosher food denying your relationship with God? Is the one commandment of not worshiping an idol that much greater than the commandment of not eating non-kosher food? God gave both commandments. So what is it in the lowest of the low that allows him to give up his life for one commandment and then completely ignore another? There's only one explanation. He's out of touch. He is into self-denial. He doesn't remember who he is. Until you challenge him, until you threaten his identity, he forgets who he is. So he's suffering from some kind of amnesia. There's some kind of a self-delusion going on that allows him to violate a commandment but defend his Jewishness with his life. But I'm not confused. So what you tell me, do the sin and it won't affect my relationship with God, it's simply not true. You have to be self-deceived to do that. Just to use an example. A man who says, I don't have to be kind to my wife, I don't have to be thoughtful, I don't have to remember the anniversary or the birthday, because we're married. We're very married. My wife is not going to divorce me over this. I'm still going to be her husband, so I don't have to be careful with the details. That's crooked thinking. It may be true. You won't get divorced over this. Your relationship with your wife is much bigger and much stronger than this one violation, and you will not be divorced over this one violation. But obviously, it makes a dent. And if you keep it up, the dent gets bigger. And the bigger it gets, the closer you get to a separation, to a divorce, and to losing that relationship. So for a person to say, I'm careless with my wife's feelings, but it's okay, we're not getting divorced, that's denial. That's not being honest. So why don't we sin? Bottom line, how do you say no to your own desire? How do you say no to what you want? You can't say, I don't want it. You can't say, I hate it. You can't say, I'm not interested. What you have to say is, it's not true of me. This is a foreign suggestion. It's not coming from the real me. So the reason I don't sin is not because the sin is so vile. The reason I don't sin is not because I'm too good for this. The reason I don't sin is because it's not true to me. I'm Jewish. And put to the test, I would die rather than deny my identity. I would die rather than bow to the idol. Then, knowing that this is the real me, what am I doing ignoring God's commandment? What am I doing ignoring God's interest and eating the non-kosher sandwich? So this little insight into the conversation that the Beinoni has with his animal soul removes many misconceptions and saves us from a lot of unnecessary and unwholesome conflict within ourselves. Sin doesn't have to be vile. It's just inappropriate. And the reason it's inappropriate is because we are God's creations. We exist to serve God. We are here to serve God. That's the reality. That's who we really are. And on occasion, we will die to defend that. And yet, we so often forget our own reality. We forget what we are. We forget who we are. And we allow ourselves to be convinced that sinning is perfectly natural to us. And that doing something that God doesn't like is appropriate to us because we have the desire. The reason not to sin is simply the recognition that having a desire doesn't mean that it's natural to me, that it's appropriate for me, or that it's where I should be. So it's a question of knowing who we are deep down inside in reality, rather than imposing upon ourselves some ideal or some religious standard that is unnatural to who we really are. So the Rebbe turns it all around. What you really are is a godly creation. What you really are is a messenger for God in this world to make this world a holy place. That's who we really are. That's what our life is really all about. And that explains why, when put to the test, we will die defending that part of ourselves, resisting, denying that part of ourselves. And that's why even the lowest of the low, the most estranged, the most careless, the most reckless Jew who violates all the commandments and feels alienated from his religion and from his beliefs and from the Torah, but if you suggest that he's no longer Jewish, he's ready to fight. If you tell him he will not be permitted to be a Jew, to act as a Jew, he's ready to fight. So he's finally discovered his truest self. Once you know your truest self, how can you purposely, cold-bloodedly, deny that and act contrary to your own true self? So what is the ultimate objection to sin? Not its ugliness, not its punishment, not the consequences, but simply the fact that it's a lie. When we are tempted to sin, it appears as if sinning comes natural. It feels, the argument of the natural soul is, this is for you. And that's not true. It's not for me. You don't know who you're talking to. I'm the person who would rather die than lose my connection to God. So what are you suggesting? So it's not personal virtue. It's not that I'm special. It's not that I want to be close to God. It's the true identity within me, it's the Jew within me that can't eat the non-kosher food. Now, this is consistent with the statement in the Talmud that says that a person shouldn't say, I can't sin. A person should say, sure I could sin, but my Father in heaven doesn't allow it. This is not a tzaddik, obviously. A tzaddik can't say, I can sin, because he can't. He couldn't do it. The Beinoni can say, yeah, I could sin. I could enjoy this. I could get into this. But my Father in heaven doesn't permit it, so I'm not going to. That's true of most sins. But there are certain sins that we should actually feel that we can't do it. In other words, we should develop such a distaste for certain sins that our own personal feeling should prevent us from doing the sin. So a person shouldn't say, sure, I could kill. Yeah, I could kill. Killing should be so despicable that even our inner being should rebel against it, and we should feel like, I can't do this. I can't do this. Now, it may not be true. A person could say to himself, oh, I could never kill. You know that that's not necessarily true. Given different circumstances and given different temptations and different pressures, of course we could. But then we would be acting contrary to ourselves. So although it's not absolutely true that I cannot kill, it should feel that way. I should work at feeling that way. And hopefully, having worked at it, I might luck out and actually slip into that category of tzaddik, at least concerning this sin. That at least concerning this sin, I feel towards this sin the way that tzaddik feels towards all sins. I just can't do it. I just can't. Which tells us that of these three categories, the tzaddik, the saint, the Beinoni, who will not sin, and the Rasha, who will sin, these three categories are not mutually exclusive. A person can exist on all three levels. There are certain things in which we should be and feel like the tzaddik. We should be incapable of certain sins. And we are. We find no temptation, we find no pleasure, it doesn't offer anything to us. We despise it, we dismiss it from our lives, and it's beyond the pale. It's just not thinkable. In that, we are like the tzaddik. There are certain sins which we cannot dismiss. We can't. We can't despise it, we can't ignore it, it's there, and there's always the possibility that we're going to commit that sin. In that, we are like the Russia. And then there are those sins that we can't do simply because it's too embarrassing. It's too visible. And because it's visible, we can't do it. In other words, because people will see, we can't do it. And that's very much like the Beinoni. We don't despise it. We haven't lost our attraction, our feeling for it, but we can't do it because it's just too embarrassing. So it's unthinkable for a different reason. It's not unthinkable in and of itself, it's unthinkable in the context. In the context of my life, a person can say, I cannot commit adultery. I can't. I've got too much to lose. I've got too much invested. I can't do it. Which doesn't mean I can't be tempted, it means I can't afford to do it. And so the person will not. You can take that to the bank. You can be guaranteed he will not do it because he can't. The circumstances don't permit it. Even though internally, yes, he could be tempted. But then there are things that a person will permit himself to do. Internally, he does not despise it. The context, the circumstances, don't forbid it. It's really just up to him, and he doesn't see any reason not to do it. So even if he hasn't yet committed the sin, he's already in that area, he's already in the category of Azusha, because there's nothing stopping him from doing the sin. And that's like the Azusha. So now we understand the three categories of Tzaddik, Beinoni, and Azusha, as different categories, because it's not just a matter of degree. It's not that the tzaddik does more good than the Beinoni, and the Beinoni does more good than the sinner, or that the sinner does more sins than the Beinoni, and the Beinoni commits more sins than the tzaddik. That would just be a sliding rule. It would not be different categories. What makes them different categories is that the tzaddik cannot sin. Not a matter of degree. He can't. The reason he can't sin is because his nature, his being, what he is, does not permit it. The Beinoni has a nature that does permit sin, so he's in a different category. This is not a matter of degree, it's a qualitative difference. He's in a different category because his personality does not prevent him from sinning. But his awareness prevents him from sinning. He is so conscious of God being present that it doesn't let him sin. And so you can be sure that he will not in the future sin. That's a category unto itself. The Zasha, the sinner, is also a new category because the context of his life does not prevent him from sinning. God being present does not keep him from sinning. So it's not that he will do more sins than the Beinoni. He is capable of sinning, the Beinoni is incapable. It's a different category. You're talking about a different reality. So that even if the sinner has not committed many sins, the fact that he does not live in the universe of the Beinoni, which means he doesn't live in the awareness of God's presence, that puts him into a different category. And so even if he hasn't yet committed a single sin, not even in thought, he is not a Beinoni because he can sin. Nothing stops him. He just hasn't gotten around to it yet. He's a slow starter. He's a late bloomer. He hasn't gotten around to the sins that he's going to commit. But he will commit them because nothing with God or with each other. In that we are like the Beinoni. And those sins that we could contemplate or consider committing, in that we are like the Zasha.